This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear Brenda Wright, Vice President of Legal Strategies at Demos, on the Supreme Court ruling striking down a key provision of the 1965 Voting Rights Act on June 25th.
Narrow 5-4 ruling on the constitutionality of the 1965 Voting Rights Act on June 25th, the majority of conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court effectively gutted the landmark civil rights legislation designed to prevent discrimination against the nation's minority voters. Specifically, the court ruling challenged the formula in Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act that determined the list of states and other jurisdictions mandated to receive special scrutiny of any proposed changes in their voting laws. Striking down the Section 4 formula, the Supreme Court decision in effect invalidated Section 5 of the civil rights legislation, which required preclearance of new voting laws in jurisdictions with a documented history of discrimination, protecting voters' rights before they are violated on Election Day. Now it's up to Congress to replace the formula struck down by the court. Since 1965, the Voting Rights Act has been renewed and amended by Congress 4 times, the most recent being a 25-year extension approved by Congress with overwhelming bipartisan support and signed into law by President George W. Bush in 2006. In a sign of how quickly the court's ruling will affect local election law, the state of Texas declared soon after the decision that a voter ID law that had previously been blocked under the Voting Rights Act would go into effect immediately. In her dissenting opinion, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg stated, "In the court's view, the very success of the Voting Rights Act demands its dormancy." Ginsburg went on to observe, "Hubris is a fit word for today's demolition of the Voting Rights Act." Your reporter spoke with Brenda Wright, Vice President of Legal Strategies with the group Demos. Here she discusses the fallout from the Supreme Court's evisceration of the Voting Rights Act and what Congress can do to repair the damage.
You know, I guess not to mince any words, this really was a dreadful decision that's going to do real harm to real people by rolling back protections against racial discrimination that have been absolutely central to the progress we've made as a nation in protecting the right to vote. The decision, by just a slim 5-4 majority, it invalidates a provision of the Voting Rights Act that determines which states need to get federal approval before making any changes in their voting laws. And that was first enacted in 1965 after, you know, years of evidence that it was needed, because in certain states, you know, every time there was a court order striking down some discriminatory voting law, the state legislature or the local government would just go back and enact a new law to replace it. So the Department of Justice couldn't keep up with it. Private litigants couldn't keep up with all of these discriminatory enactments. And so since 1965, a number of these jurisdictions have been required to get advance approval in a, you know, pretty streamlined process, actually, where they just need to demonstrate that the law is free of discriminatory intent or purpose, and that prevents the discriminatory changes from going into effect in the first place and avoids the need for protracted, you know, lengthy litigation to decide the issue. So it's been widely recognized as one of the most effective civil rights laws ever enacted. And, you know, its demise is a real blow to our democracy.
According to some analysts of this ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, the door remains open to changing what's called the coverage formula that the Supreme Court struck down. But then, of course, there is the larger obstacle of a Congress, which is fairly dysfunctional and polarized, where coming up with a new formula seems unlikely, at least in the short term.
Well, you know, I'd say a couple of things about that. I mean, I think it's really important to see this decision, you know, not to just mourn it, but to organize, as the saying goes. And I think it's got to be seen as a call to action, and it really does put the burden on Congress of stepping forward to respond to this law. And, you know, I mean, I understand what you're talking about in terms of skepticism about Congress's ability to act, but the truth is that this area is really a little bit different than a lot of others. Over the years, there's been a really incredible, you know, bipartisan support for the Voting Rights Act. When it was reauthorized in 2006, it was, you know, 98-0 in the Senate, and it was approved in the House by a vote of 390-33. And in the previous reauthorization, which was signed by President Reagan, he said that the right to vote is the crown jewel of American liberties, and we cannot see its luster diminished. So there's been a very strong record of bipartisan support for the Voting Rights Act. It's really been kind of an iconic feature of our commitment to civil rights. I think a lot of Americans take pride in it, and I think there is reason to hope that Congress can come together in a bipartisan way and repair the damage that's been done.
Now, in regard to things being better and the issue of, you know, we're in a post-racial, discriminatory United States of America, and a lot of people on the right who approved of this ruling say, hey, African-Americans, Latinos, and other minority voters were coming out in record numbers in the last couple of elections. They're not being stopped. But on the other hand, of course, we have a record-breaking number of fairly obvious discriminatory measures, both in terms of voter ID laws and new rules governing voter registration and early voting, that seemed very obviously targeted to limiting minority voters in a whole range of jurisdictions, mostly put in place by Republican state governments. Do you want to mention your concern here with the abrogating, you know, at least in the short term, of the Voting Rights Act here, and how it's going to affect what happens next in a lot of these states that are already moving to implement laws that were previously blocked by the Voting Rights Act?
Yes, it is really sad to see how quickly some of these jurisdictions are stepping forward to say we're going to go right back at it. And, you know, Texas is an example where literally the day after the decision, their very onerous voter ID law had been blocked by a Section 5 objection and by the action actually of a three-judge federal court, which found that enactment to be discriminatory. And as soon as this decision was announced, Texas is back out saying, yeah, we're going to go ahead and implement this. And, you know, not just Texas, but Mississippi has now announced that its ID laws, they're going to go forward with that. There's concern about South Carolina rolling back improvements that it had to make in its law in order to get approval from the federal court. And, you know, in the short term, we're seeing already the damage that this decision is going to do, and that just increases the need for Congress to act swiftly to respond.
That was Brenda Wright, Vice President of Legal Strategies with the group Demos. Find more views on the Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Tickets on sale now at whatthefestival.com.
Put on my ragged, worn-out working shoes. Oh, well, the weekend was too short, but I can't choose. When the Lord made the working girl, he made the blues. Well, I'm tired of working my life away and giving somebody else all profits that I lose, and leaving me before he turns that dollar loose and I get my due. And lose a little bit of these working girl blues.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Luck is Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host, with this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Every day, we are presented with a range of sustainable products and activities, from green cleaning supplies to carbon offsets. But with so much labeled as sustainable, the term has become essentially sustainababble, at best indicating a practice or product slightly less damaging than the conventional alternative. This morning, we'll talk about how to make the term sustainability more than just a marketing term. My guest is Eric Asadourian, one of the editors of World Watch's latest State of the World 2013, Is Sustainability Possible? Eric is a senior fellow at World Watch Institute, where he has studied cultural change, consumerism, economic degrowth, ecological ethics, corporate responsibility, and sustainable communities over the past 11 years. Eric, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks, Barbara. Glad to be here.
Well, thinking about the term sustainability, it seems to me that one person's sustainability or idea of sustainability is another person's idea of exactly the opposite, an example being the